time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Victor Beatty reporting. President Donald Trump used his first address to the UN General Assembly Tuesday to denounce rogue regimes, which he described as the scourge of the planet, including North Korea. He denounced those who trade with Pyongyang despite its nuclear and missile program.
It is an outrage that some nations would not only trade with such a regime, but would arm, supply, and financially support a country that imperils the world with nuclear conflict.
Mr. Trump said if threatened, the U.S. is prepared to totally destroy North Korea. He also took aim at Iran, which he described as a reckless regime threatening death and destruction.
We cannot let a murderous regime continue these destabilizing activities while building dangerous missiles, and we cannot abide by an agreement if it provides cover for the eventual construction of a nuclear program.
A clear reference to the 2015 International Nuclear Agreement with Tehran. Mr. Trump also denounced Cuba for its destabilizing and corrupt behavior.
My administration recently announced that we will not lift sanctions on the Cuban government until it makes fundamental reforms.
And Mr. Trump denounced Venezuela's socialist government for inflicting pain and suffering on its people. Togo's opposition boycotted a parliamentary vote on a two-term limit for presidents, forcing the matter to a referendum. The boycott prompted by a provision that appears to exempt incumbent Faure Gnassingbé, who has ruled since 2005, when his father died after holding office since independence. Pressure to act was sparked by mostly peaceful anti-government protests in August. This is VOA News. Nearly 140 are known dead after another major earthquake jolted central Mexico Tuesday, toppling buildings in Mexico City. It was the second major quake to strike the country this month. U.S. Geological Survey science advisor Ken Hudnut in Pasadena, California, said he understands the structural damage caused by this 7.1 magnitude quake.
Some of the buildings are on old lake beds, and that can amplify the shaking and cause the shaking to last longer, and that can make for more damage. So we think we're probably having a look at some more damage resulting from that problem.
Nearly 100 were killed following a more powerful 8.1 magnitude tremor that rocked southern Mexico September 7th. Tragically, Tuesday's quake came on the 32nd anniversary of the Mexico City quake of 1985 that killed thousands. Hurricane Maria has struck the U.S. Virgin Islands in the eastern Caribbean after thrashing the islands of Dominica and Guadeloupe, killing at least one person. Maria remains a powerful Category 5 storm with winds of nearly 300 kilometers per hour. The U.S. Commonwealth of Puerto Rico is bracing for its first direct hit on Wednesday in nearly a century. Renewed fighting between soldiers and rebels in South Sudan's oil-producing north has left at least 25 dead, including civilians. The fighting Monday occurred in the town of Nialdu, close to Bentu, which has changed hands several times since civil war erupted in 2013. World reaction to the televised address to the people of Myanmar by State Councilor Aung San Suu Kyi about the violence in Western Rakhine State has generally been cool, even though she pledged to hold rights violators to account and urged people outside to visit the state. Washington-based Carnegie Endowment non-resident fellow Vikram Nehru said the reaction has been one of disappointment.
It's true that in her speech she did talk about the importance of the rule of law and protection of human rights, but the reality is that she did not provide an explanation as to why 400,000 people have now fled Rakhine State and into Bangladesh.
Britain suspended military training for Myanmar, and U.S. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson spoke with the Nobel laureate, calling for humanitarian aid access and action on rights abuse allegations. U.S. Senator John McCain Tuesday called for reform following a series of fatal U.S. Navy mishaps.
In the last 3 years, fatal training accidents have taken the lives of four times more service members than our enemies have in combat. This cannot continue.
The Chief of Naval Operations, Admiral John Richardson, said while a high pace of operations and budget cuts play a role, leadership is responsible for safety and readiness. 10 sailors died last month when their warship collided with a tanker near Singapore. Another Navy ship nearly sank after hitting a Philippine-flagged vessel off Japan in June. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
morning, Africa, and welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm Jackson Bunganyi in Washington, and today is Wednesday, September the 20th, and here are some of the stories we're covering for you. A massive 7.1 magnitude earthquake hit Mexico City Tuesday afternoon, collapsing buildings, killing scores of people, and trapping an unknown number of people in the wreckage. In Congo, President Joseph Kabila declared Tuesday that justice must be done as he opened a peace conference in the restive Kasai region, where thousands of people have died in a year of fighting among government troops and militias. And Nigeria's Air Force says that it will be deploying aircraft to the southeast of the country, where unrest related to a campaign for secession has escalated in an area formerly known as Biafra.
I think that all Nigerians can work for a better country, but the government's response to this shows a lack of tact and a lack of understanding. I think that the government has not acted responsibly here.
Professor Oken Dibe is a Nigerian author and political analyst. And the UN Commission of Inquiry on Burundi has called on the International Criminal Court to open inquiry on the alleged human rights abuses made in the country since 2015. But the government insists that it is prosecuting everyone committing crimes in the country.
Those insurgents have been punished on the side of the government. There are some policemen, some soldiers who have been punished when they bait crimes.
Burundi Justice Minister Laurentine Kanyana and Gambian President Adama Barrow addressed the United Nations for the first time since coming to power. Stay tuned for those stories and more coming up right here on Daybreak Africa. A massive 7.1 magnitude earthquake hit Mexico City Tuesday afternoon, collapsing buildings, killing scores of people, and trapping an unknown number of people in the wreckage. Several hours after the quake jolted the capital region early in the afternoon, reports from Mexico's federal government and local officials indicated that the death toll has risen past 100 people. Casualties were reported in a wide area, Mexico City and the nearby states of Morelos, Puebla, and Mexico. The epicenter of the quake was in Puebla state, 123 kilometers southeast of Mexico City. President Enrique Peña Nieto said at least 27 buildings collapsed in the capital. Local media reports of extensive damage, power outages, and fires throughout the city, which is one of the most populous urban centers in the world. The Democratic Republic of the Congo President Joseph Kabila declared Tuesday that justice must be done. This he said as he opened a peace conference in the restive Kasai region, where thousands of people have died in a year of fighting among government troops and militias. In New York, Gambian President Adama Barrow addressed the United Nations for the first time since coming to power. The Gambian leader used the occasion to reaffirm his government's commitment to rally behind the world body. Reporter Pat Nderimbai has more on this.
In his maiden speech to the United Nations General Assembly Summit on Tuesday, President Adama Barrow spoke highly of the global body. Mr. Barrow said thanks to the UN, the Economic Community of West African States, ECOWAS, and other partners, the Gambia is today on the road to democratic rule.
Thanks to your collective efforts, the Gambia is now on the solid path to peace and good governance. I'm ready to take over our traditional role among the champions of human rights and democracy.
President Barrow came to power in December of 2016. He defeated Gambia's longtime dictator Yahya Jammeh in a highly contested polls. President Barrow informed the world leaders about the political and security challenges which faces the Gambia when dictator Jammeh refused to relinquish power after he was defeated.
Although the Gambia did not go through armed conflict, the political crisis that we experienced came as a result of decades of bad governance, weak state institutions, rule of fear, and growing intolerance. We are on the brink of political violence and armed conflict.
Indeed, a potential political violence was averted thanks to the timely intervention of the UN and ECOWAS. Mr. Barrow also commented on Gambia's economic challenges. He talks about how Jammeh squandered the country's economic resources. He also accuses Jammeh of neglecting Gambia's economic needs. But Barrow said he is optimistic about Gambia's future despite its meager resources.
We may be a small country, but one with huge needs. As a matter of urgent priority, we have developed a national development plan in line with the transformative agenda of the UGAMI. This development blueprint is designed to put the country back on track to economic growth, prosperity, following two decades of mismanagement, corruption, widespread of human rights violations.
President Adama Barrow also thanked the European Union and other donor partners for standing by the Gambia during the time of need. He reaffirmed his government's commitment to fighting terrorism, drug trafficking, and illegal migration. For VOA Daybreak Africa, this is Pandey Mbai reporting.
Nigeria's Air Force on Tuesday said it was deploying aircraft to the southeast of the country, where unrest related to a campaign for secession has escalated in an area formerly known as Biafra. Analysts fear that the Nigerian Air Force deployment will further create tension between the government and the secessionist group known as the Indigenous People of Biafra, a group that was categorized as a terrorist organization by Nigerian forces. Professor Okendibe is a Nigerian author and columnist. He tells me that the Nigerian government should worry about solving some of the conditions like poverty and unemployment in the country, conditions that are exploited by individuals like IPOB leader Nnamdi Kanu, who seek to create unrest in the country.
I think that Nnamdi Kanu's arrest was an unwise move by the government. Yes, he has a radio station that reaches hundreds of thousands of people. He has a considerable following. But what his following, I think, reflected the degree of despair, of hunger, of disappointment by lots and lots of people in Nigeria who feel that the Nigerian nation has failed to take their interests into account, that the country hasn't worked for them. The same situation is all over the country, really. You know, if you ask most Nigerians, they will say that they live in a country that serves them hopelessness. And so in arresting him, I think that the government actually made him extremely much more powerful. That a lot of young men and women who feel that this is that they are living a hopeless existence felt drawn to him.
Rhetoric is playing to a group of young people who are basically kind of disillusioned with the government, with the central government. So do you think that the reaction of the Nigerian government, including report that the Nigerian Air Force is planning to deploy aircraft to the southeast of the country to respond to the unrest, do you feel like that is an appropriate response to whatever threat that Nnamdi poses?
No, the Nigerian government's response to IPOB has not only been unwise, it has actually been illegal. You don't send the military into a civilian situation that the police ought to handle. If Nnamdi Kanu had committed crimes, the police should have been sent there to go and arrest him. In sending military tanks and other equipment into the area and to pass through his hometown, I think that the government committed an act of unprovoked aggression. And then, apparently, predictably, violence happened, and the government is being blamed for some debts, even though, again, IPOB sympathizers are blamed for the debts of other people. I think that the government has not acted responsibly here.
Does this remind you of any other situation in Nigeria in the recent past?
Absolutely. I think it reminds me of the way that Boko Haram, the Islamist terrorist group, was quickly radicalized. In 2009, the government used overwhelming force in attacking a cell of Boko Haram in Maiduguri. A lot of their members were killed and maimed, including their leader, Yusuf Muhammad. And then the military went on a rampage and actually arrested lots and lots of ordinary people who seemed to be, to them, to be poor people, made them lie on the floor and executed them extrajudicially. It was, again, another foolish vision that once you use force, you would intimidate people and they would shut up, instead of which Boko Haram went into a more fiercely violent phase of its attacks on Nigerians. And so IPOB, despite its rhetoric, which was sometimes intemperate and sometimes really childish, despite that rhetoric, IPOB had never carried out one attack within the Nigerian space. They have not officially killed anybody, so even if some people talk about one or two people who have died, I don't think that IPOB arranged to kill anybody in Nigeria. So they are, for all practical purposes, a nonviolent movement. And so it was, I think, particularly unwise for the government to escalate the situation.
Now, secessionist sentiment in this area has simmered since the Biafra separatist rebellion decades ago. Why do you feel that the government is responding like this with this, I guess, show of force at this point?
Well, if the government were worried, and I think that any responsible government should be worried that there are lots and lots of people who don't want to belong to within a nation space. That says that that nation space isn't serving the interests of those who want out. And if the government were worried, what you should do is to use a conciliatory tone to assure people that you are working on serving their interests, that you're working on creating a country that will offer them hope, that will make them live a more humane and human life, rather than to kill them. Mm-hmm. The president, Muhammad Buhari, has said consistently that the coexistence of all Nigerians was not open to negotiation. And I think that's a particularly that's an unwise thing to say in a country like Nigeria. I think that Nigerians will want to belong to the country if the country were rising to its potential and life had meaning. This is a country where unemployment is running at a very high levels, where roads are not there. There is no health care to speak of. Schools are underfunded and ill-equipped and so on. There is very little food for people. Money doesn't go around. And yet a tiny few are stealing billions of naira of the country's resources and don't get away without trial. Mm-hmm. So it is all that system, all this anomaly that is driving the demand by people to separate and to live on their own. I don't agree with that demand. I think that we have achieved the country that we work for. I think that all Nigerians can work for a better country. But the government's response to this shows a lack of tact and a lack of understanding.
Professor Okendibe is a Nigerian author and columnist. He was speaking to me from upstate New York. The UN Commission of Inquiry on Burundi called on the International Criminal Court to open inquiry on the alleged human rights abuses made in the country since 2015. This comes after the UN Commission of Inquiry released a report indicating increased violations of human rights in the country. From Burundi's capital, Bujumbura, Moses Havyarimana has more on this story.
Early this month, the UN Commission of Inquiry on Burundi released a report that indicated crimes against humanity have been committed and continue to be committed in Burundi since 2015. The report indicated extrajudicial executions, arbitrary arrests, and sexual violence among the crimes committed by high government officials and ruling party members. The UN Commission of Inquiry yesterday, during the 36th Human Rights Council session, called on the International Criminal Court to open inquiry on Burundi, and that the Burundi government is not willing to combat impunity. The Burundi Justice Minister, Laurentine Kanyana, says that the report was biased and vague.
Any person who commits a crime in Burundi is punished. To show that this is true, we have seen many crimes who have been committed by insurgents. Those insurgents have been punished on the side of the government. There are some policemen, some soldiers who have been punished when they bait crimes.
The Burundi government said that the judicial institution always convicted the perpetrators who committed crimes in 2015 when violent protests erupted against the incumbent president. However, the Burundi opposition leader and the deputy speaker of the parliament, Agathon Rwasa, said that impunity is still prevailing in the country.
In general, impunity still prevails in Burundi because, you know, many people have been killed. Some has been disappearing. Corpses have been found here and there. But we never got any information about who are the culprits, who massacred or killed those people. So this is to mean that after all, one can deny there is no impunity, but the facts are there.
The chairman of the Burundi National Independent Human Rights Commission, Jean-Baptiste Baribonekeza, said that the UN Commission of Inquiry report was hasty and biased.
The report seems to be hasty and biased based on the fact that the experts themselves acknowledge that they need some additional time to conduct thorough investigations and also be able to come to Burundi for investigation, which means even themselves, they acknowledge that they haven't been able to collect, you know, the necessary evidence that would have allowed them to conclude on their investigation.
As the UN Commission of Inquiry on Burundi called on the ICC to open inquiry on crimes committed in the country, the Burundi government in October last year started the process to withdraw its membership from the International Criminal Court, citing that the court had targeted only African leaders. Moses Havyarimana, VOA Africa, Bujumbura.
In the Horn of Africa, as Ethiopia's ethnic Oromo community prepares to celebrate the annual cultural festival known as Irecha, questions linger about whether officials have learned lessons from the deadly stampede in 2016 that led to the loss of lives. A 33-page report released Tuesday by Human Rights Watch calls on the government of Ethiopia to investigate the response of its security forces during last year's festival. Dozens of people were trampled as people fled tear gas and live rounds fired by Ethiopia's security forces, according to witnesses who spoke to Human Rights Watch and sources who spoke to Voice of America. The Ethiopian government say about 55 people were killed, while opposition groups put the number as high as 700 people. Yadesa Bojia is an Ethiopian artist and activist based in Washington, Seattle. He talks to me about what the Irecha Festival is about and why it is important to the Oromo people of Ethiopia.
The Irecha is, in a general sense of it, is basically the Thanksgiving holiday for the Oromo culture. Celebration always occur in September, and people will gather in millions sometimes to a city, Bishoftu, and basically give thanks for the peaceful transition of the season, and almost from everywhere in the world travel to that city. And those who do not make it to the capital to the city of Bishoftu will celebrate even in North American cities and everywhere, almost oversee the Thanksgiving to give thanks for the changing of the city.
And why is it of particular interest this year to the human rights community?
Well, sadly enough, last year there were a little bit of tension between the government after the Oromo protests between Oromo and the government. There was a lot of conflict, and people, as we all know, more than 1,000 people were killed by the government due to the Oromo protest and causes that related to it. And when the Richa celebration happened, the government came out with force. There was a lot of armed military forces, special forces gathering around the celebration, helicopters on top, a lot of heavy artillery on the streets. People are very nervous about the whole thing. And on the celebration, there was a chanting that happened that says, down, down, Ojani, that's basically saying they're not supporting the government. And at this point, the government, there was a shooting of tear gas on the air, and then there was a shooting of real ammunition. The government says they don't shoot, but the videos and people who just captured it through their mobile phones show that the government are using live ammunition shooting towards people. And due to that process, there was a big stampede that happened that killed a lot of people. Some people from the opposition side say 600 plus people died. The government says 68 people died, but the record that came out from that time from the local hospital and Human Rights Watch also reports this, show that there are hundreds of deaths. And these people are people like educated people, some just came out to celebrate the holiday. Like I said, it was a million people, and you put a million people in one spot, and then you start shooting the results, anybody can guess it. So it was sadly there was a lot of life loss, and it actually angered a lot of Oromo people because that was a holy site where people just come to celebrate holiday. And politics has never been the place of that. And a lot of people were angry that the government showed force that day.
Yeah, Dessa, are you worried that some of the tensions that led to the situation or the stampede last year, that some of these tensions are still in place this year, and that unless it is diffused, that it might lead to the same unfortunate events that we saw last year in the news?
Well, sadly, that's the situation did not even get better. I think it is even worse now because, first of all, there is an existing anger towards the government. Have a lot of issues with Oromo people. There's a lot of Oromo leaders in prison right now. More than, as you guys remember, there was an emergency law that was passed that ended up putting tens of thousands of people in prison. And since it is about the culture of Oromo, people will know will come out without any hesitation. And if the government starts showing this recklessness again, nobody knows how bad it's going to turn out. So that's why I'm glad to see Human Rights Watch and other organizations talking about the government trying to show restraint. Otherwise, it's going to cause more problems in the near future. And my prayer is that it's not going to happen again, but with this government, the way we're seeing they're handling things right now, it's completely out of control. There is also a border skirmish with Somali-Ethiopians and Oromo people that created by the proxy of the government proxy war, which already going through right now, and there are almost 5,000 people already fled their home from Somalia and Somali-Ethiopia to Oromo-Ethiopia. There's a lot of friction and tension right now, and so I think it's very advisable and very smart for the government to show restraint, otherwise the worst is yet to come.
And that's it for this Wednesday, September the 20th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending this morning with us. Join us again tomorrow for more African news and features right here on the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, I'm Jackson Vunganyi in Washington, wishing you a very good day, Africa.
Hello, this is Peter Clotty, host of Nightline Africa. Please join us every Saturday and Sunday at 16 and 18 hours UTC. Nightline Africa is VOA's Africa's weekend show that provides news, features, and entertainment news about Africa and the world. Tune in. You will be glad you did. I guarantee it.